my topic is the signatures of knowledge. And this is based on a paper with Melissa that appeared in this year's crypto. So some of you may have heard from some of this one. Okay. So first let's recall what's a class of digital signature. So all of us know this. So it consists of three algorithms: degeneration, signing, verifying. And what does a signature mean here? In a classical digital signature scheme, the meaning of a signature is that somebody who knows a secret key corresponding to a public key signed a message. It's really lucky that I'm virtually reading the slides. So people who came in late can just read the slides and they'll know they haven't missed anything. Okay. So what's the typical use of a signature in protocols? So one example use is when there's some sort of a certification authority who's kind of a central point of trust that everybody trusts. And then you have a certification chain. So somebody certified that your public key really is some meaningful public key. And then finally, with the corresponding secret key, you sign a message. So that's how this is typically used in an application. Every time that there is a signature verification, it verifies the whole certification chain. So what's, you know, this is maybe great, but maybe there's something to be improved. So for example, a typical application doesn't necessarily care what your certification chain looks like. All it cares about is that it verifies. However, your certification chain reveals a lot of information. It reveals which one of these intermediate certification authorities certified you. And maybe that's not information that's anybody's business. In particular, maybe it's not the business of a particular application how you came by your certification chain. So classical digital signature, it's a wonderful primitive that we're all in love with, but maybe there are still some ways of improving it by keeping the same functionality, but maybe introducing more privacy, more security into it. So here is a motivating question. Can we sign this message M if all we know is a public key, a secret key, and a certification chain? So far, of course, the answer is yes, we can, just using a classical digital signature. But now, can we do it without revealing more information than necessary? So in particular, without revealing the certification chain, without revealing how you actually came to get your public key certified. So that's the motivation. And we can ask a more general question. So let L be any language in NP. And I'm going to use interchangeably the language L and the Turing machine M sub L, which is something that decides whether the W is a valid witness for an X in the language. So this Turing machine takes two inputs, X and W, and just checks whether W is a valid witness for X's membership in L. So for example, if our favorite language is Seth, then X is going to be a circuit and W is going to be an assignment. And this Turing machine checks whether W is a satisfying assignment for the circuit. So let's say that L is a language in NP. So the question is, can we sign a message M just using the fact that we know the language in the corresponding Turing machine and that we know the instance X, and we know that this instance is in the language, and in particular, we know the witness for it. And can we just use that information in order to sign, but without revealing anything about the witness? So somehow, can we interpret any string about which we know some secret information? Can we use this string as a public key and our secret information as a secret key for the purposes of signing? So is it the case that knowing something secret about a particular public instance enables you to sign?
So, Anna,
yep.
You want to be able to sign only if you know that that's a W? Or
yeah. If somebody who doesn't know W shouldn't be able to.
No,
so that the meaning of the signature would be somebody who knows a satisfying assignment to this formula, sign this statement. So in general, an ordinary signature scheme can already be interpreted that way. Somebody who knows the secret key corresponding to this public key signed this message. And here, let's try to be more general. Somebody who knows says, like, somebody who knows a witness for excess membership and L sign this statement. Okay, so that's...
So there's also a message? In addition,
yeah.
There's a message that you sign in addition
yes.
to that?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not here, but it's important.
So does it mean that you pick the public and secret key, or do you allow more? So there is public key,
There is no public key. This is the thing. So let's say that we all know you as somebody who can access your building at NYU. This is the information that we know about you, and it's public. And you know a secret that allows you that you can punch into the door that will let you in. So that's your secret. So now you can say, as somebody who can enter my building at NYU, I'm certified that this person is my guest. So you don't have a public key beyond the statement that you are somebody who can open the door.
So what I mean, this is the question that you're trying to design a signature scheme with a fixed public key X and secret key W. Or it's a
you can think of X as a public key, right. But there is no key generation procedure that just spits it out. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's the right way of looking at it. So can you use any X for which you know something secret about it as a public key for signing? Okay. And then, of course, issuing, like coming up with a signature, signing a message, forging a signature is going to be as hard as finding a witness for the statement. So, for example, if we have a circuit for which it's easy to find a satisfying assignment, that the signature that says somebody who knows a satisfying assignment to the circuit doesn't mean. Okay, so I hope we're all on the same page as to what it is that I'm trying, what it is that I'm asking. Okay. So the primitive that we're looking for is a signature of knowledge. So it's a signature of knowledge of a witness W for statement X on message M, and it's going to mean that somebody who knows a witness signed a message. Okay. So for example, somebody who knows an appropriate certification chain signed the message M. Or someone who has valid credentials, sign the message M. So it can mean lots of things. So anything, so if you have some information that can be verified using some public verification algorithm, that allows you to sign. Okay. So here's an application for such a beast. So let's say that we're gonna be able to delegate anonymous credentials. So here's a certification authority, and here is Alan, and he's an employee. Leo is really happy.
That work's taking out.
Yes. And so Alan is an employee and he has a corresponding credential from the certification authority. Now Alan can use this credential to let his friend Bonnie enter the building. So he gives her a credential that lets her enter the building. So normally, without anonymity, this would be done by just saying, okay, this is Alan's public key, and the CA certifies that whoever owns the public key is an employee, and then he uses the public key to issue a credential to Bonnie. But if we want to be able to delegate these capabilities while remaining anonymous, then, and in particular, if we even want Bonnie to then go on and give the credential to somebody else, then we want her credential, when she presents her credential, we want that to only reveal that she got something from a valid employee, but not which one, but not whose friend she is, because that's extra information that's not always necessary for any particular application, but just the fact that she has, that she is the guest of some employee. Okay. So, what is Alan's credential going to look like, assuming that this CA has a signing key? Alan's credential is going to be a signature, like a normal signature, on Alan's public key. And Bonnie's credential is going to be a signature of knowledge of valid employee credential and the corresponding secret key on Bonnie's public key. So if we had a signature of knowledge, that then it would be immediate how you would delegate, how Alan would be able to delegate his capability to Bonnie. Yeah?
Why do you call Alan's key a public key? It could be a secret key. Does it have to be a public key?
No, it doesn't. It depends how, in the simplest possible scenario, Alan would just go to the CA and say, here's my public key, and like prove to you that I know the secret key, and then the certification authority would just give him such a signature. But you can imagine it can be more complicated where it wouldn't have happened like that.
He could generate the same credential for himself too, right?
This? Yes, of course.
Yeah, and if you wanted to prevent that, is that clear how to do it?
Yes. You could use signature of knowledge of a valid employee credential such that this public key here is not equal to this public key. Because it's something that you can verify.
So anything an MP, any statement an MP, you could do.
Okay, so that's what we're at. So I just want to mention related work. So what does the fiat, so this is reminiscent of the fiat Shamir heuristic because what's the fiat Shamir heuristic about? You have a proof of knowledge, so you can prove that you know a satisfying assignment to a formula. And the fiat Shamir heuristic says, in the random oracle model, here's a recipe for turning this proof into a signature. And in particular, Kamenisch and Stadler in their group signatures paper, they called this way of thinking about the fiat Shamir heuristic, they called it a signature of knowledge. So Melissa and I were not the first people to refer to something like this as a signature of knowledge. But the fiat Shamir heuristic, you can call it a signature of knowledge, but it's just kind of just for notation purposes. They didn't actually think about this as a building block for protocols. They didn't define it. They didn't give constructions. And actually, what we did doesn't necessarily imply anything about this type of a signature of knowledge. So it's related in spirit, but it's very different from that. So what are our contributions? So our contributions is, let's say that we adopt this approach for authentication as you are what you know. So you are what you know, and so you could take what you know and issue signatures using what you know. So we formalize that and we give you constructions for this. If that's how you think about authentication, then you can use our construction to sign things. So we give definitions for this concept, and we give two definitions. One is a game-style definition, which is more intuitive to some people and less intuitive to others. And the other one is a definition in the UC framework. And exactly. And we show that they're equivalent, so that gives us some confidence that maybe these are useful definitions. What?
You give us confidence that we don't have.
Then we don't have intuition.
Okay. Then we give a construction which is not in the random oracle model, it's based on general assumptions and doesn't tell us anything about the random oracle based constructions. And then there's some extensions. Okay. And then also this delegatable. Yep.
So, what is that your signature supposed to achieve at Kamenisch's signature of knowledge?
Kamenisch's signatures of knowledge, they were not defined. This was notation. They said, let's take the fiat Shamir construct and call it a signature of knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, what is that your construction achieves?
Our construction achieves our definition.
So, I mean, in particular, those constructions don't satisfy your definition?
Those constructions don't satisfy our definition. They are the same in spirit. They kind of... they do have something in common. There's a reason that they are called signatures of knowledge, because they take a proof of knowledge of a particular statement and turn it into a signature, just as we do. Right? Well, we don't do quite that, but we do something similar. But what they get, I can give you absolutely no theoretical guarantees about what this construct achieves, other than when you plug it into particular protocols, you can then, from scratch, prove certain properties about these protocols. But you have to do it from scratch. So it's not a modular building block. It's just a notational shortcut. Okay. All right. And because I'm not telling you guys anything about the other proofs of knowledge, you can just ignore everything I said because I don't think it conveys any information. Okay, so back to our contribution. So this problem of delegatable credentials that I described, where you say, I am what I know, I have my credentials, now using my credentials I can sign something so I can delegate, I can say, as somebody who's authorized to perform this action, I now certify that Tal is also authorized. And then Tal can delegate to Tal, and Tal can still, yeah. So this was, it was not known that this was even doable. So we show, because this is a straightforward application of signatures of knowledge, we show that you can do this. It's not, our construction is not so efficient, so you wouldn't want to do it in practice, but.
What's the relation to proxy signatures? Is there any relation? That's the relationship or something.
Yeah, they actually, yeah, there probably is a relation. I haven't thought of that. That's a good, yeah, okay.
I'm vague about it too.
Okay.
So honestly,
yeah.
The usual signatures, they also give us the required definition for the relation public key and secret key. They will not, because they can leak part of the secret key.
Yes, because they can leak part of the secret key. Even though you can think of them in these terms, they yeah. All right. So let's try to define it. So now, hopefully, all of us have some intuition. All of us, but so let's see what we can do to define it, to formalize it. So X is like a public key, like Evgeny said, and W is like a secret key. But what we don't have is we don't have a key, a nice key generation procedure that just gives them to us. So okay, so that's some intuition. Then there is, presumably there has to be a signing algorithm that takes as input the description of the language that we're talking about. Or maybe it's hardwired, maybe this description is hardwired into the signing algorithm if we're talking about a specific language. The message itself, the instance X, the witness W. So these are the ingredients that we need to issue a signature, and the signing algorithm should produce a signature. And then, since logically we think there has to be a verification algorithm that takes as input this message, this something, you know, the instance for which we know something, and the signature, and it accepts or rejects. And the intuitive properties that we expect from it is, of course, well, the first property is always is correctness. So whatever is issued using sign better be verified using verify. And then we want some sort of a zero knowledge property so that sigma better not reveal anything about the witness even once we obtain many signatures. So why is it important that sigma reveal nothing about the witness? Maybe it's okay if sigma reveals the first bit of the witness. Maybe it's still hard to compute the rest of the witness, so maybe that's no information. So the reason that nothing, the reason that we defined it as nothing is because we cannot assume anything about this language. So maybe once you reveal one bit of the witness, maybe you somehow weaken the whole thing. Maybe depending on which message you're signing, you end up revealing different bits and slowly you weaken the whole witness. So because we cannot assume anything about this language, it's the safest course to just say let's reveal nothing. And we're gonna call this property simulatability because there's going to be a simulator who doesn't know the witness and still can somehow fake these signatures.
Reveals nothing specifically about W. It's like witness and distinguishability.
Yes.
It's not like,
well,
reveals nothing about nothing.
It's like zero knowledge. It reveals, it can generate the signature even when it doesn't know a witness. It doesn't know any witnesses at all. And so it's really like zero knowledge. So it's simulatability.
But that's implying witness.
Yeah, well, zero knowledge.
Then
yeah.
How do you argue that probability? Like, do you have a CRS?
Good point, we'll get there. Okay, so simulatability is something we must require, then we must also require that.
But sorry, I didn't understand why
yeah.
you want zero knowledge and it's not enough to have witness and distinguishability.
There may be only one witness.
There may be only one witness, so then, you know, I. So also. It might be that there are two witnesses and they share a lot of the bits.
Mm-hmm.
And if you require that in order to simulate such a witness, such a signature, you need to know at least one of them, then automatically it means you know everything there's to know. So then somehow it just doesn't capture the fact that the signature doesn't reveal anything, because it might reveal whatever these witnesses have in common, and then maybe that reveals everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So intuitively, we don't want signature to reveal anything about W, and we also want to make sure that only knowledge of W can enable you to produce signatures that are going to verify, and that's normally formalized using the concept of a knowledge extraction. So there is some procedure which, when given a signature that verifies, can extract the witness W. So, yep.
So extraction gives you unforgeability.
Yes. Yeah. So, and why is it extraction? Because that's the only way we know how to guarantee that, that whoever signed, whoever computed the signature actually knew the witness died. Okay, so now, as Onkan pointed out, there seems to be a contradiction between these two, right? Because if the signature reveals nothing about W, then why should there be a knowledge extraction procedure? Okay, and also, if there is a knowledge extraction, how can you have zero knowledge? So the only way, so already intuitively it seems that what this implies is, well, first of all, a signature of knowledge is a non-interactive zero knowledge proof of knowledge. So there's something, that, you know, in order to solve this contradiction, we have to sacrifice something. So what, so it seems, so far just on the level of intuition, that it's necessary to have a zero knowledge proof of knowledge, and for that, we cannot achieve that without trusted setup. So we don't have key generation, but we must have some setup procedure. So now our instance X and our witness W are not generated using a key generation procedure, but instead of the key generation procedure, we still have something to set things up. Yeah?
Does it make sense to talk about interactive signatures of knowledge? Are they interesting? Are they generic? Because then maybe you can.
It might make sense. It might make sense. It might.
Well, I prove to you that I know that
yeah.
I want to send you a message, and
yeah.
I really send it to you only if I know the written language, but you cannot transfer it to anybody else.
Yeah, yeah, you could probably do that. Like
we,
yeah.
So, I never understood why you need zero knowledge for this kind of sales.
Why what?
Yeah, why do you need, if you go back one step?
Here?
No, this one, yeah.
Okay.
Potentially, you could just define some knowledge extraction in order to consider it if you're able to actually. Forged another signature,
uh-huh.
Then you would have known the witness even without talking to the oracle.
Even without talking to the signing oracle?
Yeah. So if you, after seeing a bunch of queries, you're able to put a signature,
mm-hmm.
potentially then you must have been able to witness
to
without.
So you're saying interaction doesn't necessarily give you more power. So
no, when I say that potentially you don't have to run into this problem with your knowledge at all. You just already find signatures of knowledge. You can just apply it like a normal signature and then maybe it's possible.
So it's debatable. Let's not debate it right now.
Wait,
I'm
missing something important.
Okay.
I thought part of the motivation you gave at the beginning was that we want not to reveal information about the witness certificate.
Right.
I mean, that we. Part of the motivation
right,
is
right.
Your knowledge, I thought.
I thought it was just.
I mean, if it's just unforgeability that you want, then it seems that it's not that different from our.
Yeah, well, okay. So, no, I want knowledge extraction. So I want to guarantee that you knew W if you issued a signature that verifies, I want to guarantee that you knew the witness.
Okay. But in the beginning, you also were saying that you didn't want to reveal information on the certificate chain.
Right.
That whose business is that?
Right. So this extraction, so that's why there seems to be a contradiction between extraction and zero knowledge, because if you... if you're able to extract, then you cannot be zero knowledge in the plain model. So that's what.
Right. No. I was just making a point that
yeah.
that it's not
that
just zero knowledge is not just a tool here. It seems like one of the
I'm
not questioning.
Okay. So you're basically saying Raphael is right, but it doesn't achieve her goal, and so she's right for her goal. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Everybody's right and everybody's. Okay.
Can you clarify why it's not witness extraction, but you said that all you want to, you don't want to know who was the one,
uh-huh.
but, so you want to maintain some kind of anonymity, right? That is witness
invisibility.
Example, you have a trusted route,
uh-huh.
and then you have CA1,
uh-huh.
but you want to know which CA1 is the one, right, from your interface like.
Right, so I want to hide
which of the second level
right.
CAs, right?
Right, so that's what would be implied by the zero knowledge
right.
property.
For that, we just need witness indistinguishability.
Yes, so for a particular application, you might get away with witness indistinguishability. But if you want to be as general as possible, if you move away from the application, then you are no, then it's no longer.
I agree.
Yeah.
Can you get something more efficient with witness indistinguishability?
That's a good question. For now, we just know that you can get this, but with, if you sacrifice something. But it's very plausible that you can do the, you know, that if you settle for ZAPS instead of NICK and then you use generalization, then you can get rid of the trust, etc. I guess that's what you're doing. Okay. All right. But for now, if we want to impose these more stringent requirements of zero knowledge and extraction, then it would imply non-attractive zero knowledge, and so we have to live with the treatment setup, even though there may be ways to relax these requirements and still achieve something interesting. So how do we formalize the simulatability? More or less, probably the way that you would expect. So there is some algorithm that simulates the signing, which can sign anything, which can fake these signatures without knowing the witness. And what we want to impose is that you cannot tell that you're talking to a simulator rather than to an actual signer. So it's defined in terms of two games. We have a games-based definition, so the signer and the adversary. You have Melissa to thank for these. Thank you, adversary.
What is the name of the
But you don't actually look like this. This is a baby.
Baby.
Okay. So in one game, so this is the real game. This is what happens to the adversary when he's talking to an actual signer. First, there's a setup that has been run that chose these parameters p. And then the adversary gets to get the signer to issue signatures. So he tells him, this is the language in NP, this is a Turing machine, and this has to be a deterministic polynomial in a Turing machine. So this, yeah, there's something implicit here. And here's the instance and the witness and the message. So this is what I want you to sign. And the signer says, okay, let's see if what you've given me makes any sense. Let's see if actually W is a valid witness for X. And if it is, then the signer is happy to oblige and says, okay, here's a signature that I generated using the signing algorithm with these public parameters for this instance and witness and the message. And sometimes an adversary will give him something that isn't where W isn't a valid witness, and then the signer ignores it. Okay, so that's how they interact together.
But why can't the adversary do it all by himself?
Of course he could. But he just doesn't. Did you know it doesn't, this little lazy, so he prefers it for other people to work. Okay. So this is game number one. And then game number two, instead of the real signer here, there is a simulator. This is Melissa's cute, I think this is the cutest simulator ever. And, okay. So here, the setup parameters are being generated using SimSetup algorithm, which gives the simulator a little bit of an advantage. So it generates these parameters, and it also gives the simulator a trapdoor to help him out. And now the adversary, similarly to this game, issues a query, asks this guy to sign an X using witness W on message M, sign knowledge of W for X on message M. And the simulator, again, checks, is this witness valid? And if it is, then he says, all right, I'm satisfied, I'm not going to be using the witness anymore, I'm just going to throw it out. And instead, I'm going to generate the signature because I know this trapdoor, so I can run a special algorithm, SimSign, that doesn't take the witness as input, that just takes X and M as input and uses the trapdoor for the public parameters in order to compute a signature. And again, if the adversary sends him something that doesn't make sense, where W isn't a valid witness, then the simulator ignores it and throws down. Okay. So simulatability means that this adversary cannot tell which of these two games he's playing. So that's more or less usual. So it means that you can generate, so that's what we've been saying all along, this is zero knowledge. You can generate these signatures without knowing the witness. Yeah.
Like adaptive NIGK is your responder where you can adapt the digital statement to the statement.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But it's a little bit more than a proof, right? Because there's a message here as well. And presumably what we want is we don't want this adversary to come and take this thing and change the message. So that's what we need to define the extraction for. So what extraction says is that given any valid signature that an adversary produced a signature on the message for which the adversary didn't query the signer that he produced himself, the adversary must somehow know the witness that corresponds to the statement.
But in your picture, even when he did query the signer, he knew the witness, because the query includes the witness.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You can't query, like, you know, chosen message attack. Like in regular signatures, you give a message, you get a signature. You don't need to give the message and the secret key of the signature scheme and get the signature.
Right, but see, if he was allowed here to query thing, to not to give the witness, to just query without the simulator being able to verify that what he's signing are actually members of L, then he could easily distinguish, because in here there is no way that the signer would respond to queries that don't verify. Whereas here the simulator would be happy to oblige.
I understand that,
yeah.
But it's kind of weird to me that there's no regular chosen message attack here, right?
There is chosen message. I mean, you're choosing the message. It's just that the witness. It's just
yeah, but
that
you can't get a signature and a message unless you know.
The next one.
Oh, okay.
Should
be the extraction.
Yeah. Yep.
Why are you defining this via the language that we use in that proceed? Why can't we just print the language as part of the setup?
Yeah.
And the signer witness. And now the adversary will just print the message and get a signature.
But the
and in the signature,
okay.
You don't give any witness.
The witness is not part of the language, right? I tell you, your language is satisfiability. Does that give you satisfying assignments to all formulas? No.
Well, you could say that signer will give his statement X to the adversary, and signer private gets a private input W. Okay, and now you get signatures on X. And ML is part of the setup.
So these are two questions. ML can be part of the setup. That's completely fine. In fact, the most general case, the easiest case, is if ML is just a universal Turing machine that runs in a certain fixed polynomial number of steps. Okay. So that would be fine. So ML can be part of the setup, there's no problem. It's just that maybe it's easier when it's given explicitly. But just because ML is part of the setup doesn't help you with W at all. So ML is useless, it's a universal Turing machine, has no information about anything, doesn't know anything about how to find satisfying assignments. The whole point of doing this is that if I know any secrets at all that can be verified using a public algorithm, so you can think of X as a public verification procedure, and W is something that's going to verify. If you have any secrets that you know and nobody else does, then you can sign. So you cannot, you should not put W as signer's secret here, because it changes. Well. Because it's not fixed. It doesn't get fixed together with the Turing machine. Because for different X, it's going to be a different W. Okay, let's move on before you guys forget where I'm going with this.
Is the signer unbounded? The malicious one.
What?
The malicious signer.
The malicious signer?
Yeah. Is it unbounded?
Well, he is not malicious. He is.
No, in case there is.
Well, let's get to the next slide.
Okay.
Okay, so extraction. So how do we require that the signer knows a valid witness? We need to provide a knowledge extractor. Okay, let's take it offline. It's really, I get distracted when people talk. Okay. So here again, we have our adversary. And what's important here is that the adversary should be able, so is that the even when an adversary has access to the simulator, so even when he is allowed to obtain simulated signatures, he still cannot, shouldn't be able to come up with a signature with for a statement where he doesn't know it's. So it's the extraction game, there's a sim setup instead of setup, where and then the adversary can query the simulator and obtain simulated signatures just as before. So these are simulated signatures where the witnesses don't play a role. And then finally, after he's obtained some simulated signatures, he comes up with his own forgery, or maybe not forgery, he comes up with his own language, message, statement, and signature. And what we require is that we have our extract algorithm such that when you run these things through this extractor, it produces a valid W. So from this signature, this extractor can recover this W. So somehow this sim setup instead of the real setup generated the parameters in such a way that the extractor has some special extra information that ordinarily you wouldn't have, but the extractor does, that allows him to do this.
So what's the uniqueness?
Hmm?
What is the uniqueness requirements? I mean, what is new and what is, I mean, that's, was that better?
So, this needs to be new. M and X. So the pair MX is new. So it can, so for a previous X, there could have been another M that was signed, or this M could have been signed for another X. But when the, or, well, actually this triple, ML, M and X together as a triple is new. Yeah?
So your ML, M and X are not to be different from
yeah.
ML, M and X in the first time?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, this, if these are the same and this is different, then we don't require that, that there is extraction. So there might be, so you might be wondering why are we giving this adversary this interactive access to the simulator at all? Why don't we just say whenever he produces anything, we there must be some way to extract. So this is a, so you could also define it without giving him this extra power. But we don't, because when we give the UC definition, without this part, our UC, they wouldn't be equivalent. So without this, the UC definition would be strictly stronger. Yep?
Would it be equivalent if instead of simulated thing, oh, it makes no sense.
Right, because this he can do himself. He knows how to sign. So if you just give him honest-to-goodness signatures, that doesn't help because he could do it himself.
Yeah, but I'm saying it makes no sense. I would imagine that this game would be in the real world, some, for example, the real game. But you're saying it makes no sense because in the real game, you know, the real world
yeah.
is not there.
Yeah.
I must repeat the same question. I just
uh-huh.
don't understand something. Okay, there's no place here. You don't allow the adversary to approach a good verifier with a good witness
uh-huh.
and get messages signed.
Uh-huh.
He had right? You don't give him the
in
second.
This game? No.
Yeah, in any game. Have you ever given, in where?
In the previous game, yes, there are two games. So in the previous game.
I haven't
game,
seen anywhere where the adversary can get chosen message attack without knowing the W.
Without knowing the W?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas in
yeah.
regular signature scheme, it's like defining
no,
a regular
right, that's
signature
what
Wojtek
was asking.
Okay, so what was the answer?
So it's true, yeah. You don't, we don't allow it. Whoever generates a signature must know W.
Does the definition protect against the following sort of malleability of X attack? So I get a signature of some message and some X, but I never knew the witness, so I
okay.
wasn't playing this game.
Okay.
And then I change the X and output a new one. Is it clear that this definition implies that's impossible? So I know I change X in such a way that I know it's still in the language.
Okay.
It's possible to modify from it to make sure it's
yes.
in the language.
Yes. So if you're an adversary, you. So in this game, right, every time you query, you somehow have to provide W.
Right.
But maybe you're somehow, you have a split personality. So there is another guy who knew W, who caused these signatures to be generated, maybe even using an honest sign, not a sim sign. And then he gave all of it to you, and he said, all right, now you try and generate a signature on maybe same M but different X, or same X but different M. Try and do something different. Let's say that he could do that. Then, in particular, he could do that if all of these signatures were generated using sin sign as opposed to honest to goodness sign. Why is that? Because if he behaved any different here, then you could distinguish with the previous definition. Okay, so in that case, we can do a further argument where you allow, you know, the alter ego, the previous adversary, not to supply the witnesses for some of these things and still obtain the output of the sim sign. So now there would never be a witness of this ever, and yet he would spit something out for which we extract the witness, so that's a contradiction. Yep.
So you said regular, a long time ago, that regular signatures are a special case of this where,
mm-hmm.
you know, it only somebody who knows the secret key
yep.
corresponding to this public key can sign.
Yeah, that's not true. I said it's regular signatures are a special case of the intuition. But regular signatures do not satisfy this definition.
Because of this doubling thing.
Yeah.
Because in regular signatures...
Yeah, or also because of the zero knowledge, because regular signatures, we can just have a designated... Yeah, one bit of the secret key, I don't mind revealing. And that doesn't contradict the unforgeability of signatures. Yep.
Is there a problem for you if you allow the adversary to get signatures on X not in the
language? You mean... No, that makes the definition strictly weaker. And why does it make it strictly weaker? Because I don't remember why, but well, I can talk to you about this later. But it does. If you don't do this check here, wait, where was the check? If the simulator isn't allowed to check this relation, then it can you can have some sort of a contrived construction where everything's going well until you output a simulated signature on something which is not in the language. So you can do an example where these things would be separate. So
but
the definition would be strictly weaker.
This must be weaker because without loss of generality, I'm just going to check if X is a witness to W is a witness to X and just abort. And so if you satisfy that definition, you satisfy this also because the adversary just never satisfies the query.
Wait, hold on. So this definition is...
It's
weaker
than...
Okay.
It's a stronger definition if I allow the adversary to see signatures on X not in the language. But is it going to be a strictly stronger definition? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Does it matter whether he only gets one interaction with the simulator or many, or is it one argument?
He can interact with the simulator as much as he wants. He can ask as many questions as he wants. Sorry. Yeah, so which ones? So. Okay. So to come back to the question of whether he really needs to check. Or not. So we had an example. There is a technical reason. So, I mean, everything can be explained by just saying, well, this is the definition that's equivalent to the definition in the UC framework. So that's kind of our blanket explanation. But we had a very specific explanation for where it fails. And I'm blanking on it right now, but we can talk about it later. Okay. Great. Anyway, so the extractor always extracts, not always, but with probably one minus negligible extracts at that level. Yeah.
So I assume any signature satisfying this implies a standard signature.
Yes.
Can you explain
why?
Yeah. Is it the setup is nothing? X is the public key. W is the private key. Or
how can it be? Because you don't give chosen message attack. In regular signature schemes, still, if you don't know the signature, the secret key, you're not supposed to be able to forge. Nonetheless, you're able to obtain messages generated with the secret key
mm-hmm.
where you didn't have to submit the secret key in order to get the message.
Right. So you do a hybrid argument. You say, all right, let's replace this game with a game where the simulator doesn't check for the witness. Okay, so let's take your public key. So I'm going to be... So I'm going to replace you, and you know the secret key corresponding to your public key. I'll replace you with a simulator where this adversary says, here is my message that I want signed, and these things are fixed, so he doesn't provide them. And I sim sign. I don't know your secret key, but I sim sign anyway. He can't tell the difference, right? Mm-hmm. Now he produces a forgery, so it's a new M. I extract, I get your secret key from him.
But it's not the same, because in your game you require the similar to first check. It's double.
Yes,
satisfied.
In,
and if not,
in the game,
it wouldn't
yes.
Answer.
But suppose that he could forge, then I could change the game on you in order to prove
so
security.
So your answer to hot tech is yes, that it
what?
Does imply.
It does imply, yes. If it didn't imply, then this wouldn't be a good definition, right? Because the first thing you want, at least you want unforgeability. So if you have, if X is a regular signing public key and W is a regular signing secret key, then the SIMX security implies unforgeability in the regular sense, because when you replace real signer with the simulator, nobody notices by zero knowledge, and then by extraction, you're going to be able, from any forged message, you'll extract the secret key of the signer, which means that the key generation of the signature scheme is broken.
So that's
okay.
One improvement.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Okay. Good. Yes. So it doesn't immediately imply just by the way we gave the definition, but it implies it as a lemma. So these are all very good questions. That's very important. I didn't have a slide for that. Yeah. I'm very glad you asked. Okay. All right, so, good. So, just before I move on to the construction, so, this definition, so it really takes a while to kind of feel good about it and buy it, right? Because it's completely not obvious that it even implies unforgeability. So it's, yeah, so there's only so much intuition I can convey, but I think I like this definition, and there are more reasons to believe it's a good definition, and in general, but, you know, it's wide open, you might be able to weaken and change it somehow and get something interesting out of it too. Okay. All right. So now that I've spent all this time on the definition, how do you construct it? Well, it turns out that constructing it is not too hard given all of the tools that we have. So since you allowed the common random string model and all these wonderful people, some of them are even here. Gave us simulation sound non-attractive zero knowledge proofs. So that means that even when an adversary is allowed to query for many simulated proofs, he still cannot produce a proof of a false theorem. And let's say we're also given a semantically secured dense public key crypto system. Dense means that public key is distributed like a random string. And here's a construction. So you parse your common random string in the sky as consisting of a public key and the common random string for non-interactive zero knowledge proofs. So this is this should be P. So you parse your P as consisting of a public key and a CRS. And in order to sign, you take your message and the witness together and you encrypt them together using this public key. And this is a public key just for semantically secure encryption. So you take these guys together and you form a cipher to send this public key. And then you provide a simulation sound non-attractive zero knowledge proof that you've encrypted the right thing. And that's it. And to verify the signature, just verify the proof.
Yeah, but the encryption might leak information on W. Or did you say that the encryption must be
the encryption is semantically secure. How does it leak information about W? No.
Okay,
sorry. This
see,
is this comma here means concatenation. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. So you just encrypt the message together with the witness. Okay. So that's the construction. And why does it satisfy the definition? So first, the simulatability. So when you generate the public parameters, since you're free to generate the parameters any way you want, so in particular you generate the public key such that you know the secret key, and you generate the common random string such that you can fake these non-attractive zero knowledge proofs. Okay. So now this is your public parameters P, and this is your trapdoor, the secret key for the scheme, and this trapdoor for the CRS so that you can prove false theorems. Okay, and when you want to sim sign, you don't know the witness, so you just encrypt a bunch of zeros, and you fake the proof using the simulator. And the reason it's secure, I mean, if there's like a hybrid argument, and it's a little bit more complicated than just one line, but essentially it's just secure because you, because of the non-interactive zero knowledge property of the proof system, and because your encryption is semantically secure. Okay, and extraction. So extraction, in order to extract, you just decrypt the ciphertext C and find out W, because a signature on a new message must contain an encryption of this message together with the witness. And so, you know what, there should also be an X here, otherwise it's kind of funny. Sorry, so a signature on a new message, on the new, for new instance, new message, must include an encryption of this message, the instance and the witness together. And because it's going to be because at least one of these components is going to be new, this is going to have to be a new ciphertext. So it's a new ciphertext, and you just decrypt it using the secret key. And what pops out at you is three components. Okay, now we want to convince ourselves that the last component really is going to be a witness and isn't going to be something else. So why is that? Because the simulation soundness of the proof says that if the proof verifies, then C must contain an encryption of W. Since it's a new ciphertext, so it has to be a statement that was never proven before. So it's still sound. Okay. So it turns out that the simulation sound non-transitive knowledge proofs are really a great thing. Just plug it in and it works. Okay.
So you don't
yeah.
see security?
Nope.
I mean, I'm just curious because people in your definition is not really great. Because in the usual we see kind of
No, we don't need CCA security. It's because it's a new statement, and it better be true. Yeah, you don't have, nobody's ever decrypts, nobody's given this decryption oracle. So the statement is new, so the proof better be sound. Because it's sound, your extractor is guaranteed to extract the witness W. Okay. Yeah?
Why is M also?
Ah, because if M, yeah, so that's actually, that's the biggest technical insight of this whole construction.
Can you repeat, what's the technical insight?
Okay. So, the reason that M is encrypted is to guarantee that the ciphertext is going to be new, right? So if M wasn't in the ciphertext, then there wouldn't be a way to guarantee that this is a new ciphertext, so therefore the proof is still is sound. So, right, because only, the proof is only going to be sound if the ciphertext is new.
But couldn't you have the M outside of the encryption?
So if M
the
were...
Of the witness concatenated with M?
Right, so if you could have... Basically what you don't want to happen is you don't want to be able to... To make the statement, just the statement that you don't want to, if part of your signature is a proof that C contains an encryption of W, if M is not somehow tied together with C, if M is outside, then I plug in another M and my proof that C encrypts W is still good. That's, so this is just a way to like tie, to make sure that if M is different, C is different. If C is different, it's a different statement. Statement has to be true by simulation soundness. Yeah, that's a very good question. All right. Okay, so we're done with the construction. So this is a theorem. CMEX secure signatures of knowledge are realizable. Okay, so why is CMEX security a good definition? So this is something that I've been coming back to again and again. So one way of doing it is saying it's a good definition, is one that lets you prove the right theorem. So since we can, this is what we can realize, then it's a good definition. And so that's a 20th century view, which I like and respect a lot. But now we live in the 21st century, and in the 21st century we have all sorts of trends emerging. So there are hybrid cars, and everybody has iPods these days and cell phones, And in cryptography, what we have in the 21st century is, oh, you see definition. There's supposed to be a drum roll. Oh. Hold on. The sound effects didn't work out. Okay. So, I'm going to skip the overview of the UC framework because we've had UC-based talks for the last...
We have 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, and see, this is a really quick overview of the UC framework. Well, see, this was the beginning. This is the beginning of the 21st century. Now... Yeah. Okay. All right. So why do we want to define security using the UC framework? So arguably, ideal functionalities are clean and they make sense even to people who don't know cryptography, even to non-specialists. So you can kind of explain, like when you explain to non-specialists what encryption is, you kind of say, well, think of an envelope, think of some kind of a physical primitive, think of a trusted third party where you tell him the value of the plaintext, and then Tal can go and ask him for this value. So you kind of already, it's kind of a cleaner. So it's good to give definition in the UC framework because they abstract away all of the crypto. And another thing that's, and that's not just UC framework, that's already the ideal real definitional approach that's inherent starting with the semantic security papers. Okay, and of course, in the UC framework, you get composition for free, so you know that whatever you give is going to live, is going to play well with the other kids that you have in your system. Okay, and now, of course, the drawbacks of this approach. So for some applications, maybe it's too strong. So in the plain model, you cannot. There's certain things you cannot do in the plain model, and this isn't really a drawback for us because we already cannot realize our signatures of knowledge in the plain model. Our intuition already says that we're doomed in the plain model. So we may as well not even try and say, all right, let's just live. Let's not worry about it. So this drawback doesn't apply to signatures of knowledge. And the other drawback is that proofs of security may be cumbersome, right? Because if you think about the simulator for every adversary, it's complicated. So, but that drawback doesn't apply to us, because we prove that our CMEX security definition is equivalent to the definition in the UC framework. So now, if you don't like proving security in the UC framework, you can just work with our CMEX secure definition, which is maybe simpler. So, yeah. So there's no reason not to define it in the UC framework and prove that the two definitions are equivalent. Yep. The equivalence is for, so the CMEX secure definition that I just gave you, if you define security for signatures of knowledge in the UC framework, again, it's going to be a leap of faith that this is a good way to define it. But if that's how you define it, then the two definitions are equivalent. Is that what you were asking? Yeah, okay. Good. Yeah, so in general, signatures, the usual definition of signatures, the unforgeability based off a chosen message attack, it turns out that it implies UC security and vice versa. So it's also, so the equivalence also works for ordinary signatures, but for different reasons. Yeah, and it doesn't need the plain. It just needs the plain model. That's Ron. Ron showed that. That's nothing to do with that one.
You kind of.
What? I am? All right. Okay, so you're not going to see the UC definition, but at least you really understood the other one.
No, but the main point is that it's equivalent. Right?
The main point is that it's equivalent.
Is the UC definition easy to understand? Because the UC definition of signatures is like a few pages, right?
Actually, no. That's a good point. So the original definition for signatures was 2-3 pages and was hard to understand.
Yeah.
But Ron has been rewriting his paper for the last 5 years, and so the definition
he
that's...
He says he simplifies it a lot.
And it's... No, it's... So if we had another hour, I would show you the definition that he has right now, and it's beautiful. I really like it very much. So, yeah, so it's... Okay, so I'm not going to give you all of that because there's no time. I'll give you something else. See, there's slides for his signature functionality. No, it is simple. simple. It's just that there's no time.
I don't think you have even time to run through these slides.
Well, I started 10 minutes late, so and it's still, so I still have 3 minutes. Okay. So, ta-da. Okay. You're not going to know why it's sufficient. Okay, but this is what the next thing that I want to get into is, so this is all well and good if we have a language in NP, and so we have CIMEX security languages in NP, we have the corresponding notion in the UC framework, we prove them equivalent, great. But in general, if we think in terms of universal composabilities, then the statements that we want to prove are not in terms of languages in NP. They're not about NP. What I want to do is I want to prove that I have something that an ideal functionality is going to like. So I have a signature that Tal issued to me, and the ideal signature functionality for Tal is going to accept it. So it's a better way of, so that way we abstract cryptography even further, and instead of thinking about languages in NP, think about things that ideal functionalities will accept. Okay. So there's, okay, so you want to define, somehow you want to define the signature of knowledge functionality such that in its belly there is another functionality. So now this is, usually we think of something running in its belly, and it's not in the usual UC framework, it's a subroutine running in your belly, or it's a simulation running in somebody's belly. Here, it's this functionality running inside of this functionality. And so this functionality somehow extends the F0 functionality. So for example, if F0 is an anonymous, is a credential functionality, so it's responsible for saying, yes indeed, this is a secret key for this credential, then this functionality can say things like, this is a signature issued by somebody who has a credential, and this would be a credential verified by this functionality. So this is, so this kind of extends. So it turns out that you can also do the same thing for these guys, and I'm not going to show you how. And And you can nest it even further. So you can have this hierarchy of signatures of knowledge. So you can have a signature of knowledge, of a signature of knowledge, of a signature of knowledge, of a signature of knowledge of a credential.
For a constant number?
Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, because every time, well, okay, you can define it for as many layers as you want, but the only way we know how to realize it is for a constant. So the construction is, you know, you take, you somehow replace this guy with the real thing, now it becomes an actual language, so now you can use the stuff we have for languages. Okay, right. So, summary. We define the signatures of knowledge, and that part of the talk I think everybody followed, I hope. and stuff that I didn't show you is how to define how to properly define it using an accepting input. And so, okay, so there's reason to believe that it's a reasonable definition, and there's reason, hopefully, to believe that it's interesting, and there is a construction. And the open issues, so the main application is signatures that disclose very little information. So maybe for some applications, you can relax the signature and get more efficiency. Maybe if you are happy with the random oracle model, you can achieve something without using simulation sound non-attractive zero knowledge proofs and actually make things that are useful in practice. And another question which I think is interesting and I unfortunately didn't have a chance to properly address is it's with these nested functionalities. So what happens if you have a functionality that's an extension of another functionality that somehow can do more things with it. What are some other examples of this, and can you also think about it in a modular, in a nice modular way, the way that you think about other UC-related questions? So, I think it's kind of interesting when you try to extend it, to define one functionality in terms of another, and see what security about the underlying functionality can tell you about security with the big one. Okay, that's it.